Good morning. It is 9 a.m. and we are gathered in the workshop Board of County Commissioners conference room. It is March 15th, 2018, or Thursday. Present are Commissioner Lily Morgan, Commissioner Dan DeYoung, and by phone, Commissioner Hare. We're going to start this morning with department business. We have two items from Public Works on the agenda for, and I would like to move number two to number one, which is a contract for Public Works Project Merlin Sidewalk Improvement Project, number MP02400 between Public Works and Copeland Paving, Copeland Paving Inc., DBA, CPI. And Mr. Brandis, would you like to come up for that, please? Please state your name for the record and what you represent.
Good morning, Rob Brandis, Public Works Director. I am here with a contract looking for board approval to sign for the sidewalk project out in Merlin. This is one we've been talking about for a while now. We advertised for bid. I was pleasantly surprised to see a huge turnout at the pre-bid, and they actually had seven formal bids submitted with Copeland Paving as the lowest responding bidder, and they were substantially below engineer's estimate. We had some concerns that just with the market getting tighter and faster with a lot of projects going on, we may not get great numbers, but apparently we've timed it right, and so we're quite a bit under engineer's estimate. Copeland's estimate was 50 working days, so presumably 10 weeks, if you know, with some holidays thrown in there, so it could even be 11 or 12, but they've got a pretty aggressive schedule on it, but they typically are able to meet those as they are. The hope would be to stage this kind of in four quadrants so the length of the project is not blown up at once, trying to minimize the, you know, there's going to be a level of inconvenience, obviously, to the folks out there, but, you know, Copeland's done this for a lot of years, and this is kind of in their wheelhouse in terms of traffic staging, keeping access to business, all that kind of thing. There's obviously some folks here today with presumably concerns about the project. We've heard from them at the meeting we had a few weeks ago out there at the community center, and a few by email as well. And I think I've voiced some of these concerns back to you that I've heard, and as we've tried to answer them, Merlin Road at this point, in the middle of the project for a sense of scope here, is 7,000 cars a day. And at the primary turn there right by Baldini's restaurant, our last traffic study showed anywhere from a 38 to 43 mile an hour, 85th percentile. So that's the speed at which 85% of the cars are at or below, which tells you 15% of the cars are doing at least 39 miles an hour around that turn there. There's been a number of accidents over the last three or four years.
And it slows down just before that curb, doesn't it? Before the railroad tracks from 55 to...
It's signed as such, but we get back to also, yeah, what that signing will show. But to that point, on the backside of this project, we're going to immediately have ODOT do another speed study out there. My guess is it will ask to have it lowered, the speed limit in that area, by a bit. So these factors hopefully calm the traffic. As you add in curb, gutter, and sidewalk, it does give that visual perception of a narrowing road, which does show a reduction in car speed. You know, you can see it on areas where instead of having this wide open feel of, man, I can really go quickly through here, narrows it down. It gives that driver the perception of a tighter area. The 99 project a couple years ago out there by Herb's La Casita and all that, very similar to this one. There's a lot of concern heading into that one as well from the local businesses. What's that disruption going to look like? How's that going to impact us? So on the backside of this, I think the upshot of this is, and projects like this frequently bear it out, is that folks slow down as they go through these areas once they start to get built up a bit. And there's a positive benefit for the businesses potentially, because as folks are able to slow down and take a look at what's there, they're more apt to stop. Additionally, with sidewalk features in there, you've got pedestrians that are going to hopefully be patronizing these businesses as well. As I said in the interim, there's going to be a 10 or 11 week period of time where this project is moving along. There's going to be trucks in the road. There's going to be forms poured, that kind of a thing. But we will be all over Copeland to make sure that they do everything they can to accommodate those businesses. One specific concern we've been hearing is from Baldini's Restaurant. They're kind of the primary right there at the turn. I've spoken with them, and we've got some ideas in mind for helping them with some additional access to the backside of their property to allow for some additional employee parking to offset the parking that's going to be impacted on the road. And the last thing I would just remind the board as well is this project is happening entirely in county right-of-way. So I know folks have gotten used to having those parking spots, but technically those are public right-of-ways. So the fact that they're not going to be able to be accessed anymore going forward, at some point, that's why you have extra wide right-of-way on roads, is if there's an eventual build-out of that road to increase the safety and the capacity of it, that's why it's there. So with that...
So we got some feedback that the community was not necessarily consulted in the scope of the project. I mean, you mentioned there were some public meetings and stuff like that, but in the past couple of years as this was being developed, what attempts to get feedback in the community or... kind of follow up.
Yeah, we had a public meeting out there where we tried to gauge public interest in a number of things in terms of how important are sidewalks, how important are bike lanes, how important are streetlights, landscaping, on-street parking, those kinds of things. I will be the first to admit that on the looking back on that thing, that we should have done additional direct mailing to some of those businesses and areas nearby to say, hey, what's your thoughts on this? But I would also say at some point as the road authority, some safety features really can't come down to a democratic process in terms of building a project. If it's a safety feature and we yield to say, gosh, we just, as citizens, as non-engineers, we don't like that, that to me doesn't get us there. If it's a legitimate concern, as I mentioned about the volumes and the speeds, at some point the county needs to be able to say, this is for the safety of everybody that goes through there. We had a follow-up meeting that I was invited to that Julie Schmelzer put on, just as more of a Merlin community meeting, what do you want to be when you grow up type of meeting. So I was asked to attend that, which I did, and heard from some folks after that, had some good conversations. And again, there, we hear the concerns that there's some businesses that will be impacted in the short term, concerned about the longer term. But I'm confident that as the project works on, well, primarily with the loss of parking, the few spots on the road, and then accessibility during...
because we saw this on Rogue River Highway, and the mess with the sidewalks going on Rogue River Highway has not necessarily been good for accessing some of those businesses.
Right, and at some point, again, you have to get back to, if you have 7,000 cars a day with those kinds of speeds, you can't have unfettered access. You're just going to have a lot of conflict points eventually with either bikes and cars, peds and cars, that kind of thing. So, perfect world, I'm sure every business would love to have all 400 feet of their frontage as in and out any which way you want to, but at some point you need to neck that down to say, hey, here's your point of ingress, egress, for safety reasons, if nothing else.
In this plan, is there any business that is completely cut off?
No, everybody retains access, and they will during the course of the project. Yeah, we can't remove access. That there's going to be a sidewalk there with standard driveway pins. We did ask for construction easements from the folks out there. We have not gotten them back from everyone, so at that point what it would mean theoretically is our work would cease at the edge of right-of-way. There could potentially be a transition issue on the backside of the sidewalk. As Copeland's working through this project, my guess is the folks will see, hey, I don't really want that lip there, so Copeland, as the contractor, would work with them to say, we will fix that transition up into your property, and the county would obviously pay for any of that work that's needed to fix that transition. But we preemptively ask for that right of entry effectively because we can't be working on private property. But the bounds of the project are within public right-of-way.
Growth is inevitable. Do you have any, did you look at stats from, say, traffic counts 15 years ago, 10 years ago, and then to now?
Sure, we have. And the earliest we could find, you know, going back 20, 25 years anyway, the road was less than 50% of that now. It was in the 2,000 to 3,000 range, depending on time of year. And the 6,000 to 7,000 I'm citing, those were done in May. So my guess is you get towards Memorial Day, 4th of July, it's probably over 10,000 cars a day in the summer. And with speeds like that, that is more than past time to start controlling a road a bit.
We're strong on the safety side of it. That was the primary reason for this?
That was the primary reason for it. And again, it's... as we saw with the 99 project, I hear Commissioner Morgan's concerns with, yes, there is a necking down of access, I guess is the way I would put it, to businesses, but there's also a very real impact with projects like this of folks just walking and saying, hey, I don't have to be dodging traffic on the side of this fairly uncontrolled road. I can walk down the sidewalk. Even if I have to park a quarter block away, half block away, I can walk to that destination on the sidewalk, and that encourages more of that multimodal as well. So,
is there a way of looking at half of the street compared to the other? I mean, most of the businesses are on the north side of the street, and where the parking and everything else are. I mean, I'm thinking about Little Pantry and Mike's Pizza and all that in there.
Are you putting
sidewalk on the other side? Or, I mean, have you looked at, does it have to be both sides? Or
it obviously wouldn't have to be, but we're not going to realize, I don't think, the full benefit of not only those safety features that I talked about and that impact of the sense of narrowing the road, but if the project's done in stages, it's going to be more expensive too. Once they're out there and working, it's cheaper certainly to have everybody out there and do it at the same time, both sides of the road. Funding for this, it goes through the MPO. For all intents and purposes, this is quote-unquote county money. We get an allocation of about $700,000 a year of state transportation funds. Typically, that money we use for our chip sealing exchange. Once the MPO formed, they siphon off about $120,000 of that $700,000 into the MPO. This project is using those funds, so this is 5 years about of those funds. They get into the MPO, they're theoretically not attached to a specific agency, local agency, but for all intents and purposes, that's where this money would be coming from.
Okay.
Has there been any discussion with ODOT about looking at the speeds on the street in a different fashion or any other options of trying to slow down speed for safety?
Short of additional signage or additional law enforcement patrols, your options are fairly limited. I mean, we don't have, you know, or you could do something like bump outs like they have in the city and places, but that's kind of the same idea as putting in that sidewalk out there for that visual narrowing. You know, and we're not going to look at speed tables or something like that. There's a lot of engineering reasons why we wouldn't want to do an actual physical way to slow cars down that's in the road.
And other than its connection to the asphalt and the actual traffic lanes, we're not recapping the street or anything of that. Are they grinding and relaying or anything?
They'll grind in areas if they have to do some taper the transitions.
For the transitions. Otherwise,
yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay. Any other questions, Commissioner?
So what are you asking of us today?
To sign the contract with Copeland.
We'll need to move that forward as administrative action to the WBS.
Yeah, I think, then we can have public comment.
And then that would be the time for public comment on it. Mm-hmm. So, Commissioner Hare?
Sounds good. Pardon me. Sounds good.
Okay, sounds good to you? Okay, so you...
Julie Schmelzer.
I heard Julie Schmelzer and you cut out.
Is she in the room?
Yes. I think you have to
have any different you worked out, because we shouldn't be making sausage over there at the weekly business session. If there's some citizen concern that should be conveyed, we need to hear it today rather than next Wednesday, right?
Julie's at the table. Say that again, please, Simon, Commissioner.
Yeah, I just wondered if she had anything to contribute to the conversation.
Well, we have heard some complaints about the sidewalks. We did have the meeting on the 21st, and Rob was there in case people had comments. I know there are still some concerns. We're doing a lot down in the Merlin area. We just had a visioning session where we talked about the idea of streetlights and possibly a theme. We have some different committees formed for cleanup, beautification, streetlights, trying to get some things moving down there. I think that although a lot of people don't want the sidewalk, I think the timing with some of the other projects we're working on is good. I mean, if we're going to put streetlights out there, if we're going to put lights out there, I think it's nice to kind of do everything all at once. So there is the benefit to having this project dovetail with some of the other projects.
So your streetlight project isn't happening in this project?
We actually have a meeting. So we had a meeting February 21st where we set up the committees. And then we actually have meetings next week, one on lights, one on beautification, to start this process. We're not quite sure on the timing of everything yet. We hope we could work with, Rob on it. It all kind of depends on how the timing of everything falls together. So if we can get the funding for lights and stuff, we'd like to dovetail with Rob's project. If not, my understanding is you can always go back and just kind of lift a panel out and put in the electric that we need for the light.
We can do direct bore on the conduit. We priced it out both ways, and there was a bit of savings doing it before the sidewalk was poured, but it was not that substantial. So basically, they go out there and they can direct bore the conduit under the existing sidewalk.
I don't see if we have two projects planned in the same area, why we wouldn't coordinate them and not try to do them at the same time versus come back and have a greater expense. But
well, we still, if the sidewalk goes through, we still want to go through and try and coordinate that. It's a matter of me getting grant funding and whether the community really wants those lights. So
what was the initiation of the lights in the first place?
Looking at the area and it's taking businesses out to the area, it appears to be a very depressed area. It's hard to get businesses interested in Josephine County, and that is one of the areas where I reached out to the Business Association and said, hey, would you like to sit down and talk? Can we talk and see maybe, is there anything I can do to help you? So we had a community meeting. We identified the community's strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. Had them kind of talk about what they would like to see as a vision. So we're just in that beginning phase now of moving forward to meet on, as a community, on ways we can improve the area, make it more desirable, clean up the garbage, do some beautification improvements, some things to make Merlin pop a little, make it a community, try and meet that vision that they had. Like I said, they came up with a vision of what they want to be, so now my job is to help us actually get there.
Well, I know we've got, you know, airport projects going out there in Merlin Airport. We've also got sidewalks and then farther on out, guardrails and turnouts on the Gleach Road out there for greater access and safety. So a lot of movement going out in the North Valley this on this go-around.
I think speaking to the meeting that Julie held out there, the sidewalk project is a proxy for a lot of things that are going on. There's always some concern with growth, and I totally get Merlin wanting to retain that feel that it's got. I mean, I grew up here for all intents and purposes. I can remember that town that area was a whole lot different than it looks now. But the proxy vote, I think, on this is that larger concern of what we don't want growth at all, potentially, or how do we do it? How do we manage it? And at Julie's meeting, the overwhelming feeling in that room that I was getting is, it's not great, but we'll take it. But our bigger concern is, like you mentioned, some of the less desirable areas, some of the folks they see traveling through shorter term. And so I think as you do minor improvements, whether it be streetlights or sidewalks or just gussying up a business in the front, it tends to the old shine the flashlight type of effect. So I get it, that hesitation of losing the feel that it's got, but I think these are very small baby steps to hopefully retain that feeling that it's got out there. They don't want it to turn into a Grants Pass, and I don't want it to turn into a Grants Pass. I'm doing this as the Public Works Department for the entire county, and we have to look at a major thoroughfare that's got a lot of red flags from a safety perspective. At the same time, it hopefully works into what Julie's trying to do to vision that thing into a better version of itself.
Safety was a big concern, definitely.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I'm not hearing any concrete that's, like, amendable to the project as it stands right now. So I apologize for asking the question. That's all I was looking for, and there isn't. I'm not hearing anything, so I say move forward to the admin.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. My thoughts are on is this right here. Whatever you're doing in the future, that's got a whole bunch of public input to go on for our streetlights, and then it's going to be round bulbs, yellow bulbs. That's going to be a long conversation. Whereas this project here for the streetlights kind of the kickoff for what could be potentially, improvement or, out in that area. But I'm looking more at the safety standpoint. I'm looking at the traffic count 15 years ago to now, and it's going to probably take another jump as we get into the tourist season again. So I'm in favor of moving it forward. Commissioner Hare, what do you, after Commissioner Morgan?
Yeah, well, and then we get a public hearing on it. So that's
the public hearing on just the sidewalks aspect as it said, mm-hmm. Now go forward. Mm-hmm. So if that's okay, we'll just go ahead and move that to the
next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday? Mm-hmm. That'd be a week from yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. We'll make sure we know, we make sure we have that on the schedule. Anything else? Any more other questions for Mr. Brandis on item number 2?
And I would just say once you're at the surplus, if the folks in the back want to hang around, I'd be happy to talk with anybody out in the hall here on the back side of that. So
okay.
We did have something come up in the weekly business session last night as far as speed concerns. Harris, Grants Pass, near off of Carton Way, and there near the airport, all the roads adjacent to the airport.
I'll talk to Rob. I've got that on my list to follow through on that over on Harris and Tacoma. So, but we'll talk about that in our regular conversation.
I'll get it down here too. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Okay, we're going to move item number 5 forward to the administrative action item onto the WBS. And Rob, will you be there to speak on this?
Yep.
Okay, sounds real good. Moving back to item A1, report recommendations for surplus public works property. Thank you, Julie. And we have, I'm going to please state your name and where you work.
Ted Trujillo, Fleet Program Supervisor, Josephine County Public
Thank
Works.
You.
Before you today is a recommendation to allow us to auction the indicated surplus assets.
And as you both, I think you guys have been through one of these before already or not. The county policy says that anything with a presumed value of $500 or greater needs to go to the board for a declaration of surplus. This is kind of the first, a lot of these are the usuals that would come up, but this is also kind of the first step in Ted whittling down the fleet, getting rid of some of the dead wood.
Okay.
And I would just add on the back side of this, we actually had 3 cars turned in yesterday based on our new minimum miles policy. So I think the bit of squeezing we're doing is working, so you may see a few more dogs get brought to bear here soon.
Okay.
I'll follow up with you before you get rid of everything. Mm-hmm. We have a project that may be coming up that needs a couple of these.
Yeah, and common practice is once it gets to this step, then we do send a blast out to all county departments and to a handful of other nonprofits that we have worked with in the past that may want them to say, hey, last chance, do you want it before it goes?
Okay.
Okay, any questions, anything further?
And when we use, we switched up to
Gov Deals,
and there'll be a 10% flat fee, which is as good as we've seen for this type of thing, and it gets a lot of eyeballs.
Commissioner Hare, do you have anything to comment on?
Nope, sounds good.
Okay, sounds good. Commissioner Morgan, you ready to move that forward?
Yes.
Okay, and then item A1 will be moved forward to the consent calendar as a consent calendar on the WBS, and you'll be there, so we'll speak on that.
I've got a twofer.
Okay.
Yeah,
sounds good. Set.
Thank you.
Moving down to item number A or B, excuse me, Community Development, Julie Smelter, Community Development Director. Item B1 is a nuisance ordinance. Item B2 is staffing. Please state your name and who you represent.
Okay, Julie Schmelzer, Director of Community Development.
And Mike Weber, Director of Public Health.
Okay.
Okay, these items really are the same thing. We've discussed this before, and we were told to come back for further discussion. So if you recall, this was regarding the fact that currently the nuisance ordinance, for simple terms, I'm going to call it the garbage ordinance, is administered by the Public Health Department, and there's been some challenges as to enforcing that. So Mike and I had presented a proposal to you last time we were here that had basically talked about a public health employee being paid for with solid waste grant dollars, being housed in the community development department underneath the current senior code administrator, so that she could direct work and oversee work and deal with the challenges of that ordinance, such as the difficult people, the court proceedings, the receivership, some of those more challenging things that have been a problem, I think, for proper administration so far. It would require bumping this senior code enforcement supervisor up one level, but then, like I said, creating a third position in public health, environmental health, that would be dedicated towards this. And when we had talked to you last time, this proposal was contingent on getting the grant dollars for that position.
Did you?
We have not applied yet. We wanted the board's blessing before we proceeded with that.
But this hangs in the balance of that grant.
This is contingent on that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is twofold. One is this is, and that's why I see two things on here. One is contingent on if we can get the grant, we want to proceed with this. The other part of it was to have that code enforcement supervisor's salary bumped just to that supervisory level, because we do have an employee that wants, as a separate related matter, if you remember, we had advertised for a code enforcement administrator. We had somebody willing to take that position, but the pay, they wanted more pay than that step even provided. We did find a second person, however, they want to start at a level that is higher than their supervisor would make. So it was bumping that supervisor that little bit. But the main crux of this is to try and get support so we can apply for a grant to do something about the garbage in the county.
Well, I think garbage in the county is just something that's resounding over and over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And how to deal with that and who's going to deal with it has always been a real struggle. So,
well, you know, public health does have the statutory requirement too, but we don't have the processes to take them in and manage the information flow, because, you know, we're talking about hundreds of complaints, and we just don't have the structure for managing that. Planning is well equipped to, but they aren't staffed to. So I think there's a joint role to be filled.
Okay, so what you're looking for us here today is to approve this
proposal,
structure,
yes.
This proposal, and then you'll go after the grants?
Yes.
And
yes.
It hinges on success of the grant dictates what you're going to do here?
Yes.
Okay. You have any questions, Commissioner Morgan?
I have lots of questions, but so right now it's the creation of one position.
Adding a public, correct, a grant-funded public health employee.
Yes, and another environmental health specialist.
Are there grants out there that provide funding for ongoing positions?
We wanted to approach the Solid Waste Fund for the funding of the position.
Has there been any discussion with the Solid Waste Agency? Is that something that they even entertain?
I'm not sure if Rob is still here or not, but when we had spoke as a meeting, it was Mike, myself, Arthur, I think Rob was there, and Commissioner here, we had talked about that would be an option to fund it, to try and fund it. I mean, short of that, you know, we could try and budget for it and put it through the general fund, but we really thought it was a good dovetail with the Solid Waste Foundation to try and get the funding through there.
Commissioner Hare, do you remember that conversation?
I do. I was hoping we'd have the conversation as a general discussion, not an admin meeting, but I think we need to make some progress on this and float it by the Solid Waste Agency. They, as you said, Commissioner DeYoung, this is a pretty substantial need in the community. I believe that those funds should be have an element earmarked for this kind of a thing. And so I was sorry I'm not there. I'd like to see the org charts and how they look currently and afterward. I think that would help me out, and also schematic of the funding stream that's going to pay for it. But I certainly see the need and support the desire to move something forward.
Would you like to see this come back to a general discussion with an org chart and the things you would like to see?
Well, I don't mean to cut him off.
No, right ahead.
But sure. I think the conversation with him, the Solid Waste Agency, needs to happen at a bigger level. There's no point in us creating a position if there's no chance of getting it funded. And
so you want us to approach Solid Waste first?
Well, I think maybe, like Commissioner Hare said, getting it back on a general discussion that we can kind of weigh through some of this stuff. But that needs, we can't even presume they're going to give an operational funding. It's not something they've ever done in their history of existing. And so to go outside the asking that, it would be good to have at least meet with the three county representatives on the agency and say, let's start there. If not, go to the full agency and have a proposal of looking, what's the benefit to that agency for expending the money this way, or various things, but without even having an inkling of if they would even entertain the idea.
Yeah, we have a little bit of a cart and horse issue or chicken and egg because, you know, from their perspective, we aren't sure if they'll go, well, we aren't going to fund a position if we don't know if the county will approve it, and you don't know if you want to fund or create a position if you know it will be funded.
Well, and I know we have some details for what to work out in the process.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely love that you guys are thinking outside the box and thinking as a whole. This is exactly what we asked for last year. This is exactly what we asked for, having a point of contact so that when there's an issue with multiple agencies, multiple concerns, it's not going to 20 different locations. It's coming to one place, and then mm-hmm. it gets out to where it's going. So this is answering something we've requested. I just want to make sure that we don't have the cart before the horse and saying we're going to fund a position, we approve a position, that there's no funding source for.
So regardless of what the structure looks like, we need the staff to make the assessments, which we don't currently have. So we can approach Solid Waste and see if they're willing to fund, see if this is something they would entertain, and then we can come back during general conversation and have a broader discussion on it.
Well, I believe it's a position we need, so the question has to come, how does it pay for, if Solid Waste Agency doesn't pay for it, what are other options? If the position is that critical to the team, you know, getting all those questions answered. So I absolutely appreciate that you guys are bringing this forward, and it is thinking outside the box. It is saying, you know what, it's never been used for that, but maybe it should be used for that, because then it'll be utilized at a greater level to the intent of what it's done. But without knowing if they would be on board to even consider it, and so, I mean, Rob and Connie, at the very least, just touch base with, I know we're going to have a replacement for Brad's position shortly.
Yeah, but that's a separate.
No, I understand, but as far as our representation on the Solid Waste Agency and getting a mm-hmm. feel for, would there be even a conversation entertained, it'd be nice to know what our options are when we come to that general discussion, right?
I think this is a really good start.
Yeah?
I think this is a really good start, but there's a lot of unanswered questions. I don't have any reservations about what you're doing here. I think we just have some unanswered questions that we can...
Okay, and that's really the directive we needed, because when we were here last time, I know we wanted to have more discussion about it. From here, we can go to the Solid Waste Agency, provided if I hear you correctly, you're interested in this, you're interested in exploring this further, so go ahead and start inquiring with the Solid Waste Agency whether it's possible.
I'm on board with that. Commissioner Morgan?
I think we have to have some of those questions answered before we have the next phase.
Right.
And then we can kind of... And then an org chart's always fun. We had talked about that before as far as if this type of complaint goes, where's it going to go? What's the process at this one and all that other kind of stuff? So I don't know if Commissioner Hare has other questions.
Commissioner Hare, do you have any comments on this conceptually?
Nope.
No. So I think the concept is good. We just need some more details on it. I think if you can provide the right answers, I think the board, you know, it sounds like the board is in favor of what you're doing here.
Okay.
Because the end result is getting rid of the solid waste, basically.
Yes.
So
okay. I believe everybody wants that.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Okay, thank you.
And then community development. Staffing for planning, and that was the same thing?
Or that was the same issue.
Okay, all right, and then item B is, we'll just take care of that. Coming up is parks. Commissioner Morgan, could you take parks for me real quick, like, while I speak with this gentleman over here for just a second?
Okay.
Okay,
Parks is resolution number 2018-010 in the matter of authorizing Josephine County Parks Department to apply for land and water conservation fund assistance from the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. And if you could introduce yourself per our new standard.
Good morning, Commissioner Sarah Wright, County Parks Director. So this resolution is presented to ask for your support in applying for grant funding for White Horse Park redevelopment. It is required that we have a resolution in order to apply for the Land and Water Conservation Fund, which is a federal grant put through Oregon Parks and Recreation. We are requesting at this time $300,000 through that grant. The entire project cost for the White Horse Upper is $1.3 million if you're talking about cash.
That's called Phase 1 in our materials here, correct?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Phase 1. It's looking at the upper half of White Horse Park where we are taking
24 tent sites, which are drastically underused, and we will be repairing those, so 10 of them remain tent sites, but we will be adding 19 full hookup sites in the upper portion of the park, redoing complete infrastructure, electric, sewer, water, paving of roads, bathrooms.
Is that going in the tent sites as well?
Water and sewer
electrical.
Will not be electrical, yes, and
water's
then
not.
Shared water hookups.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just find that sometimes even tent campers tend to use RV sites for the
sure.
water, for the electrical, to have greater use of it.
Yeah, and so for us, you can put a tent in an RV site or you can put an RV in a tent site as long as it stays on the paved area. It is really a matter of price. So $20 a night for tents, $30 a night for full hookup sites.
And the site, if a person goes to a full hookup site with a tent, it's still $30.
Correct. Okay. You're using the sources.
You're renting the site, not what you're putting on it.
Correct.
If you saw my brother-in-law and his extensive extension cords and fan in his tent, you would understand.
Sure. I haven't seen your brother-in-law. That's okay.
Probably.
Okay.
I can reassure you the project won't continue forward without receiving an ample amount of grant funding.
Okay.
So our first step is to request $300,000 through Land and Water Conservation. I have another $400,000 grant going in on the first of the month. Through Oregon Parks and Rec as well. And then I'm teaming up with the Josephine County Park Foundation so that we can continue to seek a lot of grant funding that's not available to counties.
Okay.
But we have to have a couple secured in order to get all of the other grantors on board.
Commissioner Hare, do you have any questions?
No, I just want to thank Clara for her diligence in moving this project forward. A lot of good work has been done, and looking forward to first phase being well underway.
Any target dates?
Whew.
No.
All contingent on funding.
All contingent on funding. Right
if there. We were to receive the first grant, I think that the ball would start rolling for us to continue to receive grants, partner with local businesses through sponsorships, do fundraising. I would be looking at a completion date of May 2020 if this first grant was accepted.
If everything went through. Okay.
Yes.
Good enough. Commissioner Morgan?
I'm on board with this. I've been waiting eagerly for this project to continue, as I've been a camper there many times.
Have you used the restrooms?
I've used the restrooms, the yurts, the campsites, the RV sites, and I've exceeded the electrical capacity of that site, maybe, as well.
Well, I think this is something that we've had off and on our table, and great presentations that show exactly what's going to happen out there. Whitehorse is one of our premier parks. You know, Indian Mary, of course,
sure.
I think just South End has been there quite a long time, but Whitehorse definitely needs some upgrading and whatnot. I think its use and its, you know, the interest out there over the years has been increasing, so I'm in favor of it. So with that, we'll move this forward to consent item for the WBS. Will you be there to speak?
Only if I'm needed. I'm happy to.
I'm thinking it might be a good idea because, you know, that also gets you some public awareness that something is going on out there at Whitehorse Park.
Sure.
So I think that would be a fantastic idea. If you could please do that, that'd be great.
I'll get it on my calendar.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else, Commissioner Hare?
Nope, sounds good.
Okay, thank you. Okay, item D1, thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Good job. Item D1 is transit, and it's contract without route match for real-time tracking software for transit vehicles.
All I have to ask is, am I going to need a new app?
Yes.
Awesome.
Good morning.
State your name and who you represent for the record.
Scott Chancey, Transit Program Manager, Josephine County.
Thank you.
This is something we've been talking about for quite a while, and it's actually phased this project into two phases. But this is the first phase. I'd like to point out it's $135,000. I'd just also like to point out that's all ODOT dollars and there's no local match requirement. So what this will do is pay for the software, the licensing, the installation, the equipment to install automatic vehicle location systems on all of our transit vehicles, the fixed route and the commuter route, as well as automatic stop announcement systems. In those, the computer system will announce the stop, which is a federal requirement, before we get to the stop. And there's some trigger points in there in terms of when it goes off and when it doesn't. This also will allow for us to have a web-based portal for the general public to see where our routes are in real time, as well as display route information, things like that. And it will also allow us to, it will provide for an application that will go on smart devices, so you can go ahead and see where our vehicles are in real time via an app as well. So you have two options. A lot of projects or software like this only have one or the other. Most of them just have a smart application. This one, I want to make sure we add a web-based application as well. There's a couple pieces of equipment that are included in this contract I'll just make you aware of. I didn't have them purchase the tablets, because typically there's three pieces of equipment. There's a tablet, there's a logic unit, and then there's an automatic stop announcement system that hooks into our PA system. On top of that, we need tablets that talk to the driver, uses the tablet to interface with the other equipment, as well as there'll be a TV that we'll purchase that we'll put in our office, so our office personnel dispatch can see where our vehicles are in real time as well. Because typically what happens now is that somebody calls in, says, where's the bus? And then the dispatch has to get on the radio and go, Route 10, where are you at? So now we'll be able to just look and answer some of those questions directly. So there's some other projects that we'll have lined up after this that add on to this, but this core piece is the foundation that we'll add on to that too. Some of those things might be such as interior LED signage, so somebody can see what the next stop is because it will display it. We can do some pass applications where you can use electronic fare media to pay for the ride and so forth. So, but this is the first phase, and I anticipate as soon as we get the contract signed, the actual grant agreement runs out with ODOT, runs out in June, so the entire project will be completed by then.
In real time, does this thing also register and log speeds?
Yes, it does.
Okay, so in the event that, you know, because every once in a while, I had my logo on the side of shop trucks, and I'd get a call, the other guy just went by me at 72 miles an hour. And,
right.
And with tracking, you can pretty well say, no, actually 58, but it seemed
right.
Like 72 because you were doing 20. But, so I just wonder if that came into play. On
yes, it comes into play.
Is that stored somewhere?
Yes, it gets stored on the cloud. All this, actually, the IT department, or John, had signed off on this as well. I've talked to them. But yes, it gets stored in that system as well, and it just sits there. We'll also send us an alert that if that speed goes over 35 miles an hour, it will alert us. We can alert if the vehicle goes off route. We can be alerted, so there's all kinds of things like that. So it not only is just recording it in real time and tracking that, but it will also alert us if these parameters are met or gone across.
This is similar to what I had talked about doing with Verizon for all county fleet.
That's exactly right.
So
that's exactly right. It's a little more complicated because there's some geofencing that has to happen, so it knows once it hits this trigger point, it'll say the next stop. And then it hits another one, it says the next stop, and there's some other things like that. But it's essentially the exact same as you're tracking the vehicles, the exact same with the plugins.
What communications is it working off of? Just satellite? Or?
Wireless. So
okay.
there will be a... we have a data plan now that we're using to track all of our vehicles, so I anticipate it to be about the same amount, a little bit more, and that's $142 a month. And that's
per
not,
vehicle?
No, that's the entire data plan. It's not using a lot of data. It's just sending a signal back and forth. We're not downloading or streaming a lot of stuff back and forth. It's just go ahead and picking things up. So I would anticipate it would probably go to maybe $200 for the entire fleet a month.
So if we're looking at some extension of some routes and some potential new routes, mm-hmm. how would that be impacted? I'm only asking because I know that with our sheriff's office MDTs, the mobile data terminals in the cars that we have, sometimes some issues of connectivity because of the topical terrain and all that kind of stuff.
I do not anticipate any problem. Currently, I would use the exact same data vendor that we use now, which is Verizon. And so we have vehicles that we're currently tracking with our existing tablets. It's not as sophisticated as this. It's kind of a low-tech version of doing this exact same stuff. But they're going all the way to Wolf Creek and all the way to Cave Junction. So we have coverage. We can tell that we have coverage because those tablets are constantly on, and we're tracking those vehicles now. So I don't anticipate anything that we go out. Now, if I switch to a different provider, let's say I went AT&T or something like that, because it's all going to be a cell phone provider, there might be an issue, but I don't anticipate doing that because what I have in terms of coverage is working perfectly.
And having just facilitated a panel with AT&T and Verizon, I would suggest you stay with Verizon.
Yeah, they have special stuff. So I will actually go to Verizon and buy the tablets and stuff like that outside of this contract because it's about double if RouteMatch does it for me. So that's what we have going, and hopefully come July 1, phase 2 of this will be able to start, and that will be wireless on the vehicles and stuff like that. Wireless access.
Commissioner Hare, do you have any questions or comments?
No, sounds good.
Okay, thank you. So, Commissioner Morgan, Commissioner Hare, it looks like we need to move this forward to administrative action on the WBS. Is he okay with that?
Yes.
Commissioner Hare, move forward.
That sounds good.
Okay. I agree with that, so you're all set.
Perfect. And then that's Wednesday morning.
Mm-hmm. Okay, perfect. Wednesday
morning. We had our night meeting yesterday.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay, item number 2, quarterly department updates. Jim Morgan.
Nice.
Jim Goodman.
It's okay. The other day we were Commissioner
Dean
Morgan.
Must have had an older agenda. I thought it was here on emergency management. Good morning.
Item 2A, juvenile justice.
Yes, I need to announce myself now.
Yes.
Jim Goodman, Director of Josephine County Juvenile Justice. And really... the big news is last week we officially opened the residential side of our facilities, which is the non-secured residential treatment center, and we're really, really excited about that. That we wound up making that happen about 6 weeks after we opened secured detention, and it turned out that the timeline was really beneficial for us. The ongoing training with a lot of staff that haven't done the work before. They're qualified educational-wise and that sort of thing as we recruited. This was a great 5 or 6 weeks of transition to get them started with secure detention and then add just a few youth at a time until we're up to capacity. And so all of the contracts are finally in place. All of the IGAs and all of that, so we're good to go for the next really 2 years on most of the contracting with the state and the intergovernmental agreements and all of that. So all of the red tape and everything is finally wrapped up for the programs.
Do you have any residents yet?
We do. We have just the nature of the beast, really, on the residential side, the way the case management works. The poor guy that's in charge of that, we could have had 5 or 6 kids really on the first day, but the poor guy that's in charge of that would have all of the evaluations, paperwork, follow-up plans, aftercare plans due on the same day. So we took one youth the first week, another one last week, we have another one coming in today. That will give us 3, a fourth one next week, and so on and so forth until we really reach capacity, but the referrals, we have a stack of those on the desk right now.
No shortage of business.
As a positive note, just to give you all an example of where we came from and where we are today, we took in 2 disorderly conduct cases yesterday from a middle school in the county, which those disorderly contact one disorderly conduct one cases usually involve threats to schools with a significant violence, be it either bomb threats, gun threats,
You pick those up off the internet or Facebook?
Sometimes social media, sometimes comments made on the bus, sometimes, it's a variety of things. But so we had 3 youth at the time in our detention center. So if you back up a few months when we contracted for 3 beds with Douglas, we have significant school threats, 2 of them brought in by the sheriff. And that's the kind of decisions that we were forced to make in the past. Now with the capacity, it's, sure, bring them down, we book them in, and begin the court process. And so that's just an example of a lot of stress taken off the system because we're now open. In real time, this just happened yesterday, and so that's that. I feel like it's a huge, shot in the arm, just public safety wise for this community, that we were able to, without a hassle, say yes, we will we'll intake these youth and begin that process. So.
Well, and I've noticed that even the sheriff's office has been able to utilize the detention side. Which, you know, we've talked about what would that impact be and having that. I know that once we get the school resource officer in place, there's going to be further issue there. But I don't know that the disorderly conducts would have made it into lodging in the system of renting the 3 beds.
Mm-hmm.
And so having the space available and then the residential side, I do think it would be wise of us to... do another press release and get the information out to the public and how their dollars are being utilized and that the residential site has been opened.
Right, now that we're fully operational, I'd be happy to write something up and maybe, you know, we can collaborate on that to get something out because it's, it was a big day. Our first, just another example, our first residential intake was a local youth, a female on county probation. That has really, we've really been struggling with her home environment, living environment, family environment. A lot of really stressful issues there, but no other options until, because she's not a Department of Human Services client, but was really in need of a place where she could go, get the schooling, get to school on time, you know, just all of the pieces that she wasn't getting. And so we were able to bring her into the facility, and now she's... you know, getting all of the services that she should be getting, and the department can serve her very well from this perspective. So,
I attended a 3-hour meeting yesterday at DHS that was specifically about housing and the impacts on the families and the kids and the further traumas going on as the parent may get in some trouble, but how to find a way to not neglect the kids or keep them in the process. And I'm grateful that this program is open. Mm-hmm. So, good job.
Do you have any questions, Commissioner Hare?
No, it sounds really good. Thanks for your work, Jim, and great point, Commissioner Morgan, about the press release. What I was going to say.
Okay.
Great minds think alike, sometimes.
Thank you. One of the things I do, I know you've been working real hard because, ever since we were fortunate to have the citizens back a levy for 5 years, and I know I there's a litmus test that I always use for whether a person is really working hard and he's under the gun and thinking about it 24/7, and that's the amount of gray hair in your beard. And boy is it coming out. I mean, Jim, I've known you what, 4 years, and it was black, dark hair, black beard,
well,
and
the
boy,
loss on top and the graying on the bottom.
Yeah. So you're coming right along.
Well, thank you.
It's a good litmus test.
So why not come to the commissioners where we could kick you while you're down? Right. Gee, Jim, you're looking swell today.
You're looking really swell. You're working hard, aren't you? Don't even need to answer that. But thank you very much, Jim, for all your hard work on this. And I believe you're well ahead of schedule. I think when the levy took place, took effect in May a year ago, that both you and the sheriff had about a year timeline to ramp up, for you to recommission everything that was decommissioned years ago, and I think you've done a fantastic job, just going to the open house on the detention side and whatnot. I think this is a great, great program back for Josephine County that we missed.
How many employees did you hire?
Around 20. Yeah, full and part-time.
Mm-hmm. And I'd like an update on the electronic fingerprinting.
Okay.
I mean, if we can just remember to touch base on that.
Okay.
Okay, sure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, good enough. Thank you. Item 2B is public health. Mike Weber. Medical service agreement with the Oregon Health Authority for public health to be enrolled as a provider with Center for Prevention and Health Promotion.
As well as my update. Again, this is Mike Weber, Director of Public Health, and I have a packet for Commissioner Hare, but there. Hello again. All right, so I'll parse this out into two pieces. The first one is medical services agreement.
Title 10 Reproductive Health Services has gone through a significant revision. The county is no longer administering the Title 10 program. There's some things we'll be administering, but they're separate from this conversation. They're more administrative and not actually provision of care. So this medical services agreement, now that the state is administering the reproductive health program, allows us to act as a provider. We've already received our reproductive health program certification. Signing this agreement will allow us to provide services for 5 years under a new pay model. Rather than a fixed rate, which we used to receive, we will receive a fee for service, just like all the providers in the community that may opt to become providers under this program. This does not obligate us to provide the service. It just ensures that if there's a gap in the community, we have the capability to provide the care. Okay.
So generally speaking, a resolution is an order has previously been passed that all these contract updates can go through the liaison. So for the most part, you're not seeing that we sign an average of 3 to 5 of these a week, it feels like. But this one specifically coming to the full board because of a kind of a change in programming. That we becoming the provider, and even through the RFP process that we're looking at right now and going through that, there's a function that we're going to be maintaining that is not provided elsewhere in the community. And that's why I encouraged Mike for this application and certification, or in discussing that we thought it was a good process to go through, because it's also making sure that we're not leaving funding on the table. And so I wanted you guys to have the full update of that versus me just signing it and you guys not realizing there was a change in how we're delivering the services.
Yeah, and this is independent of the RFP because we no longer can legally subcontract these services. We don't have authority to.
Okay.
So
on that one, do you want to... Commissioner Harry, do you have any questions on that part of it, the medical service agreement?
Does this need to go to business session?
No.
No. Okay.
Okay. All right. Then moving on to the update. I apologize, Commissioner Hare. I don't have the briefing deck to send to you, unfortunately. But I went through this in detail last time. My hope is that I don't have to. I was just going to let you walk through it.
Yep. I think we went through this all before.
Yep. This is just updated information. Environmental health, we'll be doing some work to support auctioned properties. We're going to start doing some inspections. I guess we used to do this. It fell off. It's something that we'll start picking up again. Animal shelter, you already received a briefing on that. We're working through a new legal holds process. And we're also contemplating a move in... I have them for you. We're also contemplating a move of the shelter location. We're going to go out and do a tour. I'll probably invite you to go along with that, of properties in the community that fit the bill. It's actually pretty tough because we need probably minimum of 1 to 2 acres. It's got to be close to town but far away from all people and businesses. It's kind of a tough thing to manage. clinical services.
Yes, go ahead. In a rural not too far out, I'm thinking of Foothill area, maybe near Tom Pierce Park, if there's anything bordering the park.
There's a few things we're contemplating. I'm probably going to try and identify 12 to 15 properties. I'm working with the real estate group, and they're helping to identify properties throughout the county.
And does the county own any that would maybe fit the bill would be a question to also look at?
I'm only looking at properties that the county owns at this time.
Okay.
We're also looking at things like trailheads. You know, I haven't approached parks, if that's a surprise to them, but I was going to maybe ask them if that's a possibility.
Good thing she left already. And...
Yeah. Hey, we're still very early conversations, so we'll probably do some tour and talk to some other directors. Clinical services, there's some partnerships going on with Juvenile Justice and the OnTrack program, but nothing overly pertinent for this board. Child or parent health programs, we're still low on hitting our WIC target caseload. I wanted to highlight that. That could affect funding, but so long as we overcorrect at the end of the fiscal year, which we're planning on doing because we're getting back up to staffing, we should be good. The state's already said that they'll allow us some leeway because they know that we were... We had people dropping like flies from the program for a bit there. So, emergency preparedness, community courses, and other other activities have been going on, a lot of classes in preparation for fire season. And can't talk about it in an open meeting, but we are looking at comeback changes.
So you and I need to talk about that separately, and then anything else would be executive session.
Yep. And overview. We have RFP briefing coming up next week. So we're doing a significant revision on our vehicles. We're working with fleet. A couple of vehicles keep breaking down. So we're looking at getting a new vehicle for the shelter, which we're slotted to get. And we may be looking at some new vehicles, but I'll talk with you offline about that, Commissioner Morgan. And we have some upcoming conferences in April. Staffing, that's a little misleading. We're at just under 90%, which I consider my target to maintain. But in reality, we're closer to about 81 if you include positions that are on hold, and that's on the last page. That's our current staffing structure. We have three positions on hold as of right now, either waiting for the outcome of the RFP to determine whether or not we retain, or because we need other staffing well established before we go into it.
Okay. Yes.
Oh, I can ask questions about some of these staffing ones. This is a great chart. And Commissioner Hare, when you get to see it, it's basically a flow chart of the staffing levels and color coordinated for who's giving notice and retiring, whose positions are vacant, what's currently going on. And so it's very helpful.
And all the vacant and positions that have given notice are either posted or we're waiting to fill. We already identified.
Okay.
So one thing I would ask, we are coming up on almost 6 months since the animal control officers moved to sheriff's office.
Yep.
They're still staffed at your office, but I think it would be beneficial for us to maybe do a joint sheriff, ACO, public health, shelter update on how this is going since the move. And October 1st was the official supposed transition of the supervisory portion. But I think by the six-month period, we should kind of get an update on where that's at. And, you know, there was some reasoning behind it at the time. Is it still make sense? Are some needed changes, or is it on track? I think it would be good just to evaluate that process.
Yeah. I'll get with them and get that on for the next briefing next month, if that's all right.
Yeah.
I'm not going to walk through it, but I included a packet. I don't have one, unfortunately, for Ricky, but it's just something that was provided by the states. Some stuff that came from WIC, and they kind of provide an annual update.
Okay.
Right. Any questions?
Any questions, Commissioner Hare?
Yeah, I've been encouraged to hear about the animal shelter possible relocation, but I think before you spend time walking about on the county property, taking tours and such, let's just sit down. I'm pretty familiar with all of them as the property liaison from the board, so I think that would probably be advantageous first off.
Oh, yeah. We're very early in that process.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much. Anything, Commissioner Morgan, you all set to go?
We're good.
I'm good. All right. Next up, and Veterans, is item number C.
Good morning. Lisa Pickard, Director of the Josephine County Veterans Service Office. How are you two?
Okay, good morning.
Three. Hi, Simon. So this is the second quarter update. We saw about 700 clients inside and out of the office. Our recoveries were over $250,000. That's $271,000 for the 3 month period.
Recovery being what's meaning what?
Okay, so the recoveries are monies that comes in to support veterans from comp and pension and compensation and pension claims that we adjudicate or that we present to the VA to adjudicate. So, for example, a veteran comes in the office, he's been injured in the service, we develop a claim for him, we send it up to the VA, the VA makes a decision on the claim, he comes back, he's 100% service-connected, it brings in so much money per month for him and his family, it's tax-free, and the money's the lag time that it took for the veteran to receive the money and the original claim, the date the original claim was sent in, the whole development period, the veteran gets a retro amount on that, gets retro monies from that development period. It can be anywhere from 6 months to 7 years, depending on how lengthy the development is. And right now we are representing veterans at the board level down at White City. So cases that have been on appeal for 5 to 7 years, we represent them at the board level through video conferencing. And those retros, if awarded, tend to bring in huge amounts of money to the veteran. I do not calculate, most counties calculate monthly income moved forward for the year into that retro amount. I do not. I only calculate those large retro amounts, retro checks that come in from the development process. So last quarter, we tracked $271,957.04.
So I know they have lots of TV shows about lottery winners and that they're now broke because they got all this money and they blew through it and all that kind of stuff. So as we're spending months upon years helping people get through this process and they get this back pay, are there any services provided about effective planning with that money?
Financial planning? Correct. Absolutely. There's some financial planning. We have some stakeholders in the community, and we kind of make those judgment calls when we, you know, initially interview the veteran and see how the claim is through the whole claiming process. We'll make those judgment calls. There's some veterans, it's like putting gasoline on fire. For other veterans, it's a complete life stabilizer, life changer. They, you know, they can, you know, now him and his wife can now purchase a home. Their kids are out of the trailer. They're, you know, they all have education benefits, and you know their kids are going to college and it's paid for. And it's a life changer, a generational changer. And so, and we run the gamut. There is a fiduciary process. If veterans are deemed incompetent throughout the course of this claiming process, then you know fiduciaries step in and things like that. So we have that is, you know, and we have local people that help them do financing, you know, figure out their financing, the stakeholders. They'll be at the stand down tomorrow if you want to go.
What's that?
The stand down is a, well, actually in Josephine County, it's stand up. We're kind of jumping to the bottom of the.
No, but you go ahead and go on your
Okay, so our office is in pretty good shape. Our Applegate outreach is now starting to see numbers, so we're really excited about that. We're still working on the Williams and Murphy guys. I have 3 or 4 of them coming out there next month, so that's fantastic. So our numbers are kind of shooting up out there, and what's really innovative about that particular outreach is it's dual county. So we're starting to break down the county lines, even though our monies is all distributed per county. So if I do a claim for a Jackson County veteran and the claim wins and he gets an award of $10,000, that goes to Jackson County, not to Josephine County. So I don't count that money. But we're learning that, you know, we're looking to kind of break down those barriers throughout Southern Oregon, Klamath County, Klamath and Jackson and Josephine and Douglas and Coos, and kind of break down those barriers and just really fortify best practices throughout the region is kind of, and if you look at my my goals for 2018 and beyond, that's one of the goals, is to break down those lines a little bit. So moving on, so you know, that outreach is turning out to be a good outreach, and so it's kind of like a little pilot program. Our staffing, we have one CBSO in training. We have one still out on FMLA, so we're a little short downstairs. We have a temp in there, though, that's kind of helping us out. We don't have any work studies at this point. So the college now has been, the college RCC has established a work study program. They're eligible for 5, and I think they might even go up to 7 this next year. And what happens is now the work studies, if they can do work study on campus and just get to their jobs and work a few hours, go to the next class, work a few hours, go to the next class, instead of driving across town and coming to our office, It's much easier for them. And so we're finding that we don't have the kids from the campus coming out and saying, hey, can we get a job in your office? We're going to start doing outreach on campus probably this next term. They have a really great veterans room out there where the work studies work in. And we're able to go out there and write claims, you know, develop claims for veterans that are on site out there. So, you know, our work study program's kind of taken a little bit of a hit. But we're busy training all these other VSOs, so I haven't really.
When talking about work and job opportunities and training and whatnot, years ago, they used to have what called all the job training, where basically, you know, mm-hmm. you weren't, you know, I was at Rogue Workforce Partnership, we talked about unions, and we talked about schools, and we talked about who was going to get into training a workforce. Mm-hmm. But years ago, they used to have an on-the-job training program that would pay, for instance, if you went to work for a heating and air conditioning company, and you were a veteran, you got something from, it's not college, but it was called OJT, on-the-job training. Basically, they filled out a form and said, yeah, this guy worked for me 40 hours a week, and is there a position at the end of a three-year period? I think it was like a three-year period. Would there be a position, in other words, if he was trained to be a service manager or service mechanic or whatever, and at the end of that, would that position be, is there a position available for him? Mm-hmm. And it was fairly easy to maneuver, mm-hmm. but however, it helped the veteran out. Mm-hmm. From that standpoint, he's not really union, to
right.
where he needs to be, you know, regimented and so on and so forth, and pay into the dues part of it. But it did help out an awful lot, because there was three or four young men that went through it at a place that I was involved with, because I'd fill the paperwork out for them.
Right.
And it worked out really well for them at that time, because when they start out at these vocations, a lot of times they don't get paid a lot of money.
So
is there anything like that?
The work-study program is similar. So we've had a very successful work-study program for the last 15 years. Young veterans who are going to school and receiving their GI Bill are eligible to work in our office up to 25 hours a week and get paid through the VA for the work. And what happens is not only do they learn the office skills, but they also get exposure to other departments, to other programs. I have a couple of them now that are master's recipients that are down at White City, that are counselors down there. It's just a wonderful program.
That's fun.
So
that is,
I don't have another program like the one you're talking about.
All right, that's what I was asking.
I do
you
know.
Have a program that would basically knit them into an office job or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm talking construction. We have a horrible shortage of construction people. We have mm-hmm. a housing shortage. But part of that housing shortage problem is the shortage of contractors and people actually physically do the work. Whereas, you know, the OJT program was on the job training. Was the guy be able to frame a house when it gets done? Yes. Fine. Then we'll pay a couple $100 a month. Something of that sort. And I didn't know if it went away or if it's even...
That may be something that's offered through, you know, the DVOP, the Disabled Veterans Employment Opportunity. Opportunity Employment.
Okay, well, I would...
Here locally.
Next time we go to Rogue Workforce, I'd like to have maybe some options of what veterans does, because I lean them towards veterans. They're always leaning towards the schools and this and that and the other thing, but I want to lean them towards what kind of programs a veteran would have available to them.
Perfect. Tomorrow's a really great example of our WorkSource Oregon, our disabled veterans outreach person. He's coordinating with RevCo, Rogue Valley Veterans Community Outreach. They put on the stand-up here. We all coordinate together. We're putting on the stand-up here in Josephine County. The biggest part of that stand-up is an employment fair and benefits fair for veterans. And then it's going to be separated into two different buildings this year. One building is going to be for, the food and entertainment and local human services stuff. And then the other building is going to be benefits and employment fair. And that's going on tomorrow at the fairgrounds. Or Friday. Which day is it? Today's Thursday, right? Tomorrow at the fairgrounds, starting from 10 to 2.
Okay.
Or from 10 to 4. So a lot of stakeholders. I think there's going to be 30 or 40 employers there. I think Josephine County is going to be there for hiring veterans. It's a big deal.
Okay.
Big deal. I sent you flyers on it this morning, or I gave them to Ricky. She should be handing out those packets.
We both have a commitment at 10 tomorrow.
It's going to be going all day. Just come on over. Come on over at lunchtime. You get free lunch.
Yeah. We're okay.
But the Work Study program, it's a great program. It's just taken a hit this last 9 months because of RCC and their opening up their Work Study program. They're kind of growing it a little bit. I did apply for a grant for the DD214s, their Veterans Music Outreach Program. The grant application for ODVA this year was so overwhelming. This is the first time they've done that, the first time they've put out these grant opportunities for nonprofits and things of that nature, or governments as well. And this is directly related to the lottery dollars and funding that's going down now, last session. So they put out some grant opportunities. They flooded with grant applications. So I was supposed to hear on the grant that we wrote March 1st, and now I got word from the state that this morning that it'll be another month. So we're pushed out about a month. I did want to touch on the Veterans Music Outreach Program is starting to grow, and we're in need of space, and you know that.
We'll work on that.
I think Simon knows that, and everybody's working on that.
How much usage do you use? I mean, how often?
Well, if this grant rolls in, we're going to be opening it up. What we really want to target with this grant is some of the younger generation, the 9/11 guys. And the problem, I've had many of them come through our program. The sustainability for them to be in our program during the day, they can't. They're young, they're working, they have families. And so we were going to open it up to a nighttime, have some nighttime sessions. So, we're looking at right now, we're squeaking in, or we're playing four days a month, and that will probably double if this grant comes in, at least. We'll be doing other things with this grant.
What I was trying to think of is where would be a environmentally friendly, safe location that your stuff can be set up without having an expense of a building conversion. And one of the things came to mind is maybe one of the local churches that maybe doesn't have evening services every night, but would have a space that you guys can have set up. And then you'd have a place that you can practice and rehearse and such that is less sterile.
That's an option. The equipment, when it comes to the equipment, you're talking microphones and sound equipment and all that. You have to make sure that there's nobody.
I'm a musician. I know.
It's technical. Yeah. It's hard.
I've had rooms in my house converted to music studios.
Exactly.
Most
so
of my
you
life.
Know.
Yes.
So you know. So it's very difficult to find a spot that is secure.
But I still think there's a way to find a partnership that may provide for that.
I'm hoping we can do a bit of a small conversion and have it just set right here, local, right in the backyard. Be great. That's my hopes are.
We're working on it.
We're working on it.
A bunch of different options.
We're working on it. Okay. There's a lot of different options. So we have stand-up tomorrow at the fairgrounds. I did want to touch on the email that you sent out, Lily, about the writing, alerting veterans when they come back or before they go into the service. So we had a standard operating procedure where we would receive DD-214s from the state, all the veterans that were discharged from the service that lived in our area. And when we received those DD-214s from the state, all the honorably discharged veterans, we would write a welcome home letter to, thank you for serving honorably in the United States, whatever, blah, 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 welcome home. Board of County Commissioners would like to welcome you home.
Was this the letter that we sent out from one of the other counties that was saying something?
No,
like that?
This is in response to that letter.
Okay.
Because that's something that they're doing that's different. But what we used to do, it was a standard operating procedure for years, and it started, I believe, with Commissioner Ellis. we used to type out welcome home letters and send them a package. We said, you know, we're your local veteran service office. These are the services we provide. We have a copy of your DD-214 on file. Please contact us, and we send them cards. And, you know, and it was all signed by the commissioners. It was a great deal. Then the Department of Defense went electronic. And so what's happening now is, and that transition of DD-214 stopped about a year and a half ago. And what's happening now is the Department of Defense is sending spreadsheets to the state. And the state has finally figured out a way to disseminate those down to the counties, the information that we need so that we can contact these veterans right out of the gate. And that should be implemented by summertime. I talked to the director this morning. Okay? Again, stand up is tomorrow from 10 to 2 at the fairgrounds, or 10 to 3-ish. We have a Welcome Home Vietnam Veteran on Thursday, March 29th. That's at the park, Riverside Park Pavilion. Any Vietnam veteran can go. It's free lunch. It's benefits available for veterans. It's just kind of like a good feel-good thing. And
do you
also,
ever go?
You should. You should. It's kind of good. You can go there. You get a great barbecue lunch. No, just go get a great barbecue lunch and say hi. It's a good thing. Okay. And then nonprofit started this Tap Rock free breakfast for veterans. We got speakers coming in, and I sent you guys the breakfast calendar. We'll be on it May 3rd. I know that Simon Harris attended many of these, so, or at least a few, right, Simon? Are you even there?
Yes, I was blowing my nose. I'm sorry. Yes. They're really good.
Thank you for putting it on mute.
Right.
I'm sorry you're miserable.
I know. Me too. Get better. So that kind of winds it up. Do you have any questions
at all, Commissioner Morgan?
I do.
Okay.
I'm
what do you got?
Trying to pull up the National Association of Counties County Explorer Mapping County Data. This is what happens when you send me to a conference. I learn about resources. And
yeah, it was from Andy?
I don't know who the...
Andy people. Smith. He's our AOC.
Oh, no, this was NACO, National, in D.C. So, first off, the Secretary of Veterans Services for the country spoke at the conference. Veterans Affairs, okay, fine.
But yeah, so that's whoever the federal VA. Okay,
whoever the federal secretary guy appointed by President Trump.
Roger that.
He mentioned Grants Pass, Oregon twice. Mm. And it was kind of neat that you're in this room representing 3,062 counties, and the only town he mentions is Grants Pass, Oregon, in his entire presentation, and he mentions it twice in a positive way. He was talking about how the veterans have their telehealth program and how he is still a practicing intern and has a practice in D.C., and he video conferences with his veterans health clinic in Grants Pass, Oregon, and provide services to our veterans.
Mm-hmm. If we were on national television with about
yeah.
2 months
but,
ago.
But that he announced it to the whole group was kind of neat. Unfortunately, he then went on to talk about the opioid problems within country, and they had a list of the top spots of concern nationwide, and Roseburg was number one on the list nationwide.
Yep.
So the fact that we were the positive and an hour away was the negative in his presentation was pretty amazing. He didn't talk about other areas. So why Southern Oregon was on his radar, I was excited.
That's really good.
I've got my thoughts on that, but go ahead.
Were you the only commissioner in attendance?
Meeting? No, there were...
We're all three...
No, Commissioner Hare was there.
Okay.
Commissioner Hare and Commissioner Morgan were back.
I may have happened to have hollered out when I heard my hometown mentioned, and everybody knew where we stood on that. But, you know, and talking to Congressman Walden's office about it, too, when President Trump actually talked to our local clinic, Congressman Walden was in my office that day, and they're like, oh... You guys didn't coordinate with us. We could have been on the other line and had the president on one side, the congressman on the other in Grants Pass, Oregon. So anyhow, I thought that was neat. But on the County Explorer, they had put that $97 million of benefits are coming into veterans in Josephine County.
That's correct.
That's pretty incredible. Do we know how many veterans that is servicing right now?
Well, as far as the on the VA, va.gov, and the demographic study, it's 9,000, I think it's 9,538 possibly, maybe 9,738 veterans. That's what they categorize our county as. That's the last statistics that they have.
And 9,538 veterans brings in $97
million. Yeah. The $97 million, though, you need to explain what that covers, right, which is medical, education.
So can I show you, Lily, really quick?
Yeah,
do you have a moment?
Well, I'm trying to...
So just pull up va.gov.
Okay, so my computer's not being very cooperative today.
It's very interesting statistics.
All you got to do is just pull up va.gov.
I was about to restart my computer because it's been in the circle of death.
If you sent me an email, I would have brought you the spreadsheet.
Well, and that's just it. They were trying to show us how to look up the...
62 or 63 million of that, I think, is comp and pension. That's what we do.
Yeah.
And when I started this job in 2001, there was $3.2 million coming into Josephine County.
Well, I think this is good conversation, but probably not for now.
We can probably...
Yeah, so if you want to explore that on your own, Commissioner
you want
Morgan,
me to send
I
it
encourage
to you?
That.
I do. I, was
I will
just,
send you the spreadsheet.
Yeah.
I'm trying to pull up the map. It's not working. But anyhow, to say the least, to have the Secretary announce his program and his connection with Grants Pass Oregon was kind of neat, and I was proud of you and the work that you're doing.
You.
And it was a positive for us, so thank you.
Any other questions, Commissioner Hare, for veterans?
Sounds good.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Morgan, you okay with everything for the report?
Absolutely.
With a follow through on the...
And if I could get it to open up and not have the permanent circle of death, which used to be the hourglass, now it's the circle of death.
Yes, it is.
We have our forms that you provided on the network as well.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I will email you all three. You want that spreadsheet? I will email you that link or the spreadsheet itself to show. And what the spreadsheet shows is it shows dollars come. It shows our population, and then it shows the dollar, the total sum coming into Josephine County, and then it breaks it down from comp and pension services, health services, education benefit dollars, special unique veteran dollars, and there's a couple other ones in there. But
okay.
It's really easy to read.
Thank
okay?
You.
You bet.
Okay. Item number, I'm going to need a break here in about, so do you want to go first? Is your presentation a long time, Arthur?
3 minutes.
3 minutes. Okay, why don't you come up, Arthur O'Hare? We'll do a finance report and business update from Arthur O'Hare, the finance director. And then before we go into other business, we'll take a short break.
Okay, thank you. I've got budget is the main topic. So we're working with all the departments to get their budgets submitted, and we're trying to be very... careful to ensure that they meet with their liaison commissioner at some point in time. So the budgets are due in 3 weeks, and so sometime between now and that point in time, April 5th, we're making sure that people are meeting with their liaison commissioner to ensure that the budget has been reviewed at that level. So the other thing is that we did receive our the budget award, the National Budget Award, from the Government Finance Officers Association of the United States and Canada for our 2017-18 budget, the current budget year that we're in. This is the sixth year in a row that we've received that reward, not reward, award. and that's based on a lot of the work that Chris Carlson does as our budget analyst and putting it together and making sure that it contains all the elements. I met with League of Women Voters earlier this week, and they frankly said that they love our budget, that our budget on the web was one of the most clear and understandable, and you can find information in our budget as compared
did
to...
Did you pay to say that? What?
Yeah, I know. They're trying to butter me up because they wanted more information. But they thought our budget was great. So that is the budget piece. The other one that I wanted to bring up was on the fee changes. The Parks has requested that we look into maybe processing the fee change. We normally do it once a year. I told our parks director that I would need to check with the board because the board has to approve that, and that if we're going to go through that process with one department, do we want to open that up for all departments for this middle of the year fee change? She's just looking at one fee, I think, for yurts perhaps, but there might be others. So something to consider. You don't have to make that decision right now today, but something to think about if that's what we want to do. Open it up for parks, open it up for the rest of the departments.
Why didn't that come through a month ago when we just did this? Or was it 2 months ago?
No, well, it was January 1 is when our new fees went into place, and we normally have done that once a year.
Do they go into place at the beginning of the year, or do you want to do it at the fiscal?
Well, they're January 1st. Okay. So for the last several years, we've been doing it once per year, effective January 1st. And that's just to make it consistent so that the citizens and people who are affected by this, and also the department directors, know that once a year, effective January 1, we update our fees. So doesn't say it can't be done. It can be done at whatever time, but it takes, our fee process takes about 3 months to go through from start to finish, couple of publications in the newspaper, public hearing, and from the date that you sign the order to change the fees, we wait 30 days from that point before they become effective. So it's somewhat of a drawn-out process, deliberately so, and so we've been trying to make it a once-a-year event so that everybody knows and everybody prepares. But that's where we're at on that. Like I said, we don't have to decide today, but the parks is looking at wondering if they could get something done sooner than next year.
Before budget.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think we ought to have a presentation, a general discussion.
Okay.
I think that might be a great idea. You, how about you, Commissioner Morgan? So we fully understand where and the timeline that they want to do?
Yeah, generally I don't know that we.
It sounds like it's a change to what we're normally doing, correct?
Right. It would be a mm-hmm. change.
So we normally entertain fee changes fiscal year end if they're absolutely necessary. And Sarah and I have talked a little bit, but not extensively, about a possible solution that doesn't include a fee change that accomplishes the same thing. So.
Okay.
We. Let's just hold off for a minute until I talk to her. I haven't heard of any other possible fee change proposals yet.
I have not opened it up or discussed it with any other department director, so I wanted to find out what the board's mind was on this, whether we wanted to move forward with parks, and if so, if that was a positive green light, then do we want to open it up to anybody else who possibly might have a mid-year change? So that's
we
where
we move forward with one, we up to everybody.
Yeah.
So that would be my proposal.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's have a discussion on that.
Okay.
Anything else, Arthur?
That is what I brought.
Thank you very much,
Thank
Arthur.
You.
And right now, before we get to other business number four, let's take a short break.
What's that?
We'll take a short break for 5 minutes.
Okay.
Does that work? We'll be back here at 10:38.
Leaving the recorder on? Off? I don't know.
Let's turn it off.
Are you using the restroom or are you?
I'm going to use the restroom and speak to the gentleman here. So, okay.
All right.
So I guess we turn it off because we're out until back on. Mm-hmm. It is 10:38 and we're back in session. Item number four, other business. Is there any other items to come before the board? Commissioner Morgan?
No.
No. And Commissioner Hare, do you have anything to bring before the board at this time?
No.
Okay, so we're in good shape. Going on to item number five, board business is the AOC annual dues. And that was...
I haven't seen the bill. I thought we were going to have a discussion item by item, but with you said that Mike MacArthur's coming down next week.
Yes.
I would recommend that we postpone until after he's here. We can maybe have that discussion.
Okay. So does that make sense to you, Commissioner Hare? Mr. MacArthur is going to be down here next Wednesday.
Sounds good.
Okay. We will move that forward then. Mike MacArthur. Got it. Item number 5B, resolution in the matter of appointing an enterprise zone manager for the Rogue Enterprise Zone. So Reddy has asked the board to sign the resolution appointing Colleen Padilla to the Enterprise Zone Manager, which he's been doing since 2016. I think there was a vacation of that position a long time ago, and basically it never was refilled. Colleen just stepped into that position, and I think she's asking to make sure this gets taken care of on a, you know, at their level. Is there any discussion on that? Commissioner Hare?
No, it sounds good. If Ms. Meltzer agrees, that's where it should go.
Okay.
She's not here for us to ask any longer.
No, I think this has been something they've been working on for quite a while, and it comes up and then it goes away and it comes up, and Colleen has just continued to fill those boots, and I think they just want to make sure that it's ratified and made official. So asking, you know, if there's nothing more from that, would you like a presentation at the WBS or just put this on the consent calendar? Consent calendar okay for you, Commissioner Hare?
Consent item. It's not a change in practice. It's just her predecessor was named.
Okay.
We just need to name her.
Okay. We will put that on the WBS consent calendar. Moving on to Item 5C, Resolution Number 2018-012, in the matter of appointment of the Local Alcohol and Drug Planning Committee. Commissioner Morgan?
So,
give a short presentation.
Public Safety has had a representative on the LADPC as long as I've been aware of it. It's always been their crime prevention officer, and most recently their crime prevention officer was moved to parole and probation, so no longer fills that role, and was replaced by Officer Ken Fraunfelter. The only concern I have is it says remainder of the term to expire. I didn't know that we were doing terms on these types of positions or not. We can reappoint in October, I guess, when it expires, but it's one of those things that's a position filled by another agency. So, like, on a board where there's a city council representative, it changes as often the city council maybe switches liaisons. This is one of those as well, that public safety just designates who that liaison is, and then we appoint that. So, but no, this is fine. But yeah, so Ken Fraunfelter, the spelling on the last name is just switch the E and the L. So instead of Fletcher, it's Felter. He's the officer that's filling in that role. He'll be filling in as part of the drug court team and other things, so he'll be a good fit for that position.
Okay. So I move that forward to consent. Is that okay with you? Everybody's okay? Consent? Sounds very good. Any questions, Commissioner Hare?
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Item D, Josephine Housing and Community Development Liaison Discussion.
I thought Leah was going to be here for this conversation. There's a requirement of the county to have a housing policy in relation to receiving some federal grants and different items, and I'm not sure how this got on the agenda. But I know Leah mentioned to me yesterday she was wondering who the liaison was for housing and community development. I thought it was Commissioner Hare for the housing committee. And anyhow, there is a request to put forth the county needs to pass a policy regarding housing. So I think we'll have to put it off until we know more about why it's on the agenda.
Yeah, I think in reading last night's paper, they're doing quite a deal on housing as they... Is it joint between Josephine and County and Grants Pass, City of Grants Pass? The housing, they had like a housing Q&A and discussion on it here. And I don't know where they really came up with it. I think most of it was pointed towards city stuff. And the reason why we builders aren't building more houses and things of that sort, more multifamily housing and high density housing. So I'd be interested to see how that comes out. This has been a subject that's been kicked around for quite some time, and I really haven't found any answers to it yet or any solutions to it. It's kind of like some of the other things that just keeps coming up, and we don't ever come to a conclusion as to what would be our goal and how we're going to fix it. So let's put D off to a future date, okay? E is a resolution number 2018-004 in the matter of appointment to the Josephine County Rural Planning Commission. Commissioner Hare, did you have anyone chosen or you know, ready to move forward on it?
I don't. I was supposed to have those names, but unfortunately, some unforeseen, and I haven't had a chance to refine and get a recommendation to the board, so I don't have one today.
Well, let's put that off till you're able to, you know, get yourself better and get back in here. And
can we just postpone it a week?
We'll just postpone it 1 week. Does that make sense for you?
Yeah, that sounds great. The same
okay.
thing. The draft board practice ordinance. Below under G, I think we just need to kind of mull it over for a little while.
We were going to...
It's not be eagerly put forward. It needs to be well thought out.
And we were going to get the newer rendition of the copy, right? That was going to get emailed out on the forest ordinance?
Provided to the board.
Okay. So, yeah, so we hadn't received that yet. So when we do, then that'll give us some time to...
that was the same one you got last Tuesday. There hasn't been a new copy. We gave you the copy last Tuesday.
Okay, so the copy that was in the packet on Tuesday is the current one? Because there was question of if it had... There were some edits that hadn't gone into it.
I was collecting sign... Yeah, that's correct.
Okay.
I hadn't gone into it. That's exactly
got right. Got it. So that is the current draft.
This is it.
Okay.
Copies for everyone.
All right. So that's going to be... Do we have a time frame that you want to bring it back?
Commissioner Hare?
I haven't thought about it yet. So.
Yeah, when you're not feeling well, it's hard to think of anything else, and it's not a hurry, so we can wait.
I think F and G should both, when we got a full board here and we can actively discuss it. Phone is spotty at best, so let's if it's okay with the rest of the board, let's go E, F, and G.
Well, before you go off, all right, so F is board projects.
F is board projects 2018.
Is there an updated list on those, or you guys come up with a consolidated?
We just put them all into one document. They're all in their own versions, and we just page numbers like we do the packet.
Can you remind me where they're saved at?
I believe it's in ACC. I'll find out.
Okay.
Okay. Well, he's not going too far, I hope. Is that okay for project? We'll move that forward also. Do you have more time to review it?
Yeah, we'll...
F and G will move forward to a time...
Correct.
From Commissioner Hare. Item H, is there any matters from commissioners? Commissioner Morgan, Commissioner Hare?
I needed to bring up the Regional Solutions meeting Friday at 10 a.m. There was a request to see if you could cover that.
Right.
And so I just wanted to bring that up to make sure Caleb had emailed today asking for confirmation. So,
do you know how long that meeting will last? Regional Solutions?
Let me find the email.
Starts at 10.
Sorry, everything on my computer is very slow today.
It's at 10 o'clock. It doesn't list an end time.
Okay.
What's that?
It does not list an end time.
Okay. Well, I'll just plan on
it's
two or three hours. I can't imagine it'd be less than 2 hours. But I can't imagine it. They don't show lunch plans or anything, so I'm going to assume it's done by noon. Okay? Anything else for matters? Commissioner Hare? Okay, thank you. Okay, seeing that, we are going to go into...
We have to wait for executive session till 11 o'clock, because
okay.
It was...
So we'll wait
Was it noticed for 11 a.m.? Yeah.
Yes, it is noticed for 11 a.m.
So we'll adjourn for 10 minutes.
So let's adjourn for 10 minutes, and we'll reconvene at 11 a.m. and go into executive session.
Simon, do you want us to just leave you on the line? Or do you want to call back in? Okay.
Okay.
We'll hang up.
Okay.
Are we adjourning?
We are adjourning at 10:49.